Our theme this month is unity and diversity, and we are thinking, singing, celebrating this morning love and faith, qualities and expressions of love and faith that offer unity amidst diversity. When we reach for those we love, whose spirits shine like stars, among all those saints, some we've known and loved, and many we will never know, among those is surely Paul. Paul, the self-declared apostle, a man of great heart, great vision, absolute faith, and necessarily enormous chutzpah. And I don't mean that as a slam, because it takes chutzpah, audacity, fearlessness, nerve to do what he did and achieve what he achieved. Paul lived around the same time as Jesus, but only himself became a follower of Jesus many years after Jesus had died. Until then, Paul was a traditional Jew, in fact, a very traditional Jew named Saul, who did not appreciate the revelations and changes of the Jesus movement, which began as a sect within Judaism. He did not appreciate those revelations and changes that Jesus and his followers declared. He was so angry and alienated, in fact, by them that he actively persecuted followers of Jesus, wanting to end their faction and their faith. And then on the road to Damascus, he had a revelation of Jesus's reality and message, and everything changed. This is where the chutzpah comes in. Because every other apostle had been chosen and recognized by Jesus, and a lot of them were still alive. Paul nominated himself to join their calling and share it. Apostle comes from the Greek word apostello, which means to send or be sent forth. Paul sent himself forth, honoring his own lived experience, and became eventually the most effective and impactful voice in the early church, expanding and redefining the nature of what became Christianity for all time. This makes him complicated in a number of ways. One is that he is one of the strongest voices in the Bible who argues for supersessionism, a doctrine that the new covenant through Jesus supersedes or supplants the original covenant that Jews believed God made with the Jewish people. So it's not just a declaration of faith in Jesus, it's also perceived as an undermining of Judaism. And that didn't sit well with Jewish people then. It still doesn't sit well all these millennia later. This is why Jews call their scripture the Hebrew Bible and not the Old Testament. The Old Testament is a name that only exists in relationship to the new, improved Testament. Another complication is that Paul was so foundational to the evolution of the Jesus movement that his letters became an essential source of authority. Modern scholars agree that his letters contain a number of passages that are not actually original to his letters. Instead, their content and even their different grammar and vocabulary show that these passages were later interpolations that were inserted to draw on Paul's authority for their own purposes. And some of these passages, interestingly, include Paul supposedly declaring that women must cover their heads and be silent and submissive in church communities. In fact, it's highly unlikely that he said any such thing. To the contrary, throughout his letters, Paul repeatedly greets and honors women in his letters as colleagues and leaders among the congregations that he founded. I first preached about that 25 years ago, that mainstream scholars believe Paul honored rather than silenced women in his assemblies, and that his work was later really turned inside out by people wishing to shut down women in their communities, especially now. That resonates as our nation struggles with issues of gender and justice. But even then, many years ago now, in that small congregation, it was like a lightning strike. In the wake of my presentation about Paul and women leaders, a number of women came to meet with me, Unitarian Universalist women, Unitarian Universalist women who had been told under Paul's authority to sit down and shut up in the churches they grew up in, which had not been Unitarian Universalist churches. They had left those churches, many of them for that reason. And now, all these years later, sometimes almost an entire lifetime later in another faith, to learn that that was actually a lie, they were amazed and exhilarated and appalled. Even though the Bible was now for them, at most, one of many sources of wisdom, still they were emotional. These words of Paul's had put them down and pushed them out. And now to learn that they weren't even really Paul's words, it mattered. It gave them, in our not Bible-based faith, a sense of agency and empowerment and possibility that had somehow remained undermined and diminished all that time. So there is no doubt, for us religious progressives, there is still power in the Bible, which was part of our upbringing for so many of us, and remains essential in so much of our national discourse. Something we may not realize is that Paul and us, we actually have a lot in common. For one thing, as we've learned this week, almost universally, Unitarian Universalists base our faith on lived experiences. If you are at one of the classes with Tundeika, you heard this repeatedly, which is what Paul did. And for another thing, like Paul, we are not afraid to rock the boat. This carries with it some obvious challenges, but more importantly, staggering possibility. And the staggering possibility is my point this morning. Paul wrote extensively because he spent all his time as a follower of Jesus founding ecclesia, or assemblies, congregations, well beyond Jesus' original territory in Judea. He planted communities all around the Aegean basin, especially in what is now Turkey and Greece, at Ephesus and Corinth and Thessaloniki and Philippi. These are the names of Paul's writings because they're where the communities were that he wrote to. He sustained those communities with letters, or as the Bible calls them, epistles. They were his avatars. Even now, they convey not just Paul's theology and his mission, but the genius and intricacy of his thought and the dynamism of his character, just as they did when they were freshly penned to those congregations he founded across seas and mountains and nations. They were the only way to manage what one of my religion professors, Alan Callahan, called the ultimate long-distance relationship. The letters kept him in touch with congregations when he was far away, and years might pass before he would see them again, if ever. Another part of Paul's genius was that, unlike the Jerusalem leadership of the Jesus movement, Paul absolutely believed you did not have to be a Jew to be a follower of Jesus. He was wholly committed to opening up Christianity for all people. The Jerusalem leadership weren't actually pleased about this. And debate about this endured for a while, but he won their permission to pursue his mission with the promises of money raised to support the church and the poor. And he fulfilled those promises. And his mission ended up phenomenally, transformationally, enduringly successful beyond perhaps even his wildest dreams. Many of Paul's letters follow a similar format where he identifies himself as the author and reminds recipients of his authority. And we now know that point about his authority is meaningful. And of course, self-proclaimed, the result of his own revelation. After this identification, Paul would then express his gratitude for the church, offer words of encouragement, and then launch into the reason he was writing. And there was always a reason. He didn't just write to say, hey, how's it going? Usually he was answering pressing questions sent to him by the congregation. And this is the case in Galatians, which is one of the shortest, most passionate, impatient, and best known of his letters. Galatia was an inland region just south of what is now Ankara in Turkey. The Galatians had sent to Paul because visitors had come to their congregation, which he had started, to challenge Paul's teaching, saying that to be an observant follower of Jesus required conversion to Judaism, including circumcision for all males. And this, not surprisingly, was a source of concern to Paul's congregation in Galatia, many of whom were Gentile converts from pagan religions. As the visitor's message undercut the heart of Paul's teaching, the Galatians' letter was, not surprisingly, a source of more than concern for Paul. His urgency and his irritation in the letter is palpable as he moved from a curt salutation right into this frustrated rebuke of their questioning his teaching. And it's in this irritated, short letter by this egocentric zealot that we receive some of the most beautiful and compelling expressions ever penned on the necessity of community and relationship and the imperative of spiritual freedom and the absolute power of love. You heard this in the reading earlier. Paul's point is not just to deny, but emphatically reject categories that divide us, that turn us against each other, that carry with them different values in personhood. Instead, he declares that everyone is free of those, touching on exactly those identities that were then most polarized and polarizing: Greek or Jew, slave or free, male or female. All are one? This was absolutely revolutionary. In ancient society, where life was short and brutal for almost everyone, where suffering was everywhere and everything about your life and your fate depended on your gender and your status and your religion, as it did, he spoke against those realities. It's an extraordinary vision. Even now, when we're on a wave that's pushing against so many old categories, even against binary definitions themselves, because we know that for so many, all kinds of identity and capacity are a spectrum rather than poles. And still, it is so hard to free ourselves, to be free of old imprisoning categories. We want to fling the doors open, like Paul did, but more often, we have to prize them open. We have to prize them open and scratch and claw and bloody ourselves to force doors to open so that we can breathe, so that we can move, so that we can be ourselves and each other free. Free to attend and respect the truths and varieties of human identity and experience, to attend and respect each other. Because when we truly attend and respect each other, we are on the path to love. When we truly attend and respect each other, we are on the path to love. When we look to the lessons of our own lives and hearts, they begin to free us. And what they free us for is love. You may remember a story I've shared with you before about the Philadelphia poet laureate Sonia Sanchez. If you recall, she was coming home around 1 a.m. from work in an underprivileged neighborhood in Philadelphia to another underprivileged neighborhood where she lived. Sonia Sanchez is a very small woman, and she was in her 70s at the time. She's now in her 80s. She had with her her briefcase and her bulky purse, and suddenly, at the other end of a dimly lit block, she saw a young man, a teenager, walking in her direction. And she saw him notice her from the other end of the block, and she saw him stop and see her, and then look up and down the block and see that there was no one else there at 1 a.m., and then stop walking towards her more quickly. Do you remember what she did? She ran to him. And she threw her arms around him and she said, "Oh, my brother, I'm so glad you're here. Now you can walk me safely home." And he did. And she sat on the stairs with him when they got to her home, and she asked him why he was out so late, and he said, "Got no job, looking for stuff to do." And she said, "There is no life for you out here late at night. Out here this late, you will find no work, no life, only death." And they grew into a friendship that night. And she helped him find a job where she worked at Temple University. This is the kind of freedom and faith that Paul is talking about. Deep, human, spiritual transformation and a kind of brilliance, taking a stranger, perhaps even someone we fear, and changing a moment and lives by declaring kinship. She ran to a strange youth and called him her brother, and she talked to him, and she got to know him, and the connection they both made together was lasting. All are one. Not every instance of freedom and faith looks like this. Most do not. The far more frequent opportunities for many of us don't make for a dramatic and inspiring vignette. They look like small acts of respect and care and love for someone who doesn't feel seen, someone perhaps we didn't see, or someone who has hurt us and may not even know it. The opportunities to do this, to live in a way that doesn't diminish others daily, even hourly? What if we took on the challenge of never diminishing anyone ever? Not with a glance, not with a word. It would be a huge undertaking of mostly small acts, requiring great energy and constant mindfulness as we developed that muscle. That muscle called our heart. Paul's vision of a peace and freedom grounded in faith working through love. Paul's vision of peace and freedom grounded in faith working through love has more than one formula and more than one form. It is so powerful that we can take it entirely out of its Pauline context and drop it elsewhere, and it still works, like gravity or light. Wherever it occurs, faith working through love necessarily supports peace and freedom with it, and that is precious to remember right now, when our struggle is to be free of those prisons of classification and judgment that falsely, evilly infect us and confine us and divide us and demean us all. Against all that, we are determined to uphold the essential worth and dignity of every human being, to embody our faith working through love and its harvest of peace and freedom. We know the gift of community, of being with each other through thick and thin, of claiming our neighbors as friends and strangers as friends. We bring light and gravity with our faith and love and declare this is sacred, this is human, this is just, this is essential, and we will have it. Redefine our world, just as Paul did 2,000 years ago. One man. One man. 2,000 years ago. Just as radical, just as challenged, maybe even more so than our vision of openness and compassion and justice is now. We are determined to bring these into life. And we know we will need to circle back again and again and again and redeclare our vision and defend it against attacks and grow it and preserve it as strongly and passionately and unwaveringly as Paul did again. Against all the powers that were, he created and spread this vision, this way that redefined an entire faith so thoroughly that when we are reminded now of the issues he was struggling with at the time, we're amazed. But he did it. It can be done. And if it can be done, then we can do it. And this is the best part, I think. We want to do it. We want to nurture our vision and band together with others until love and faith have won freedom and compassion and justice and peace that must be. We want it for our world and we want it for ourselves, each one of us. Because we all long, every single one of us longs, you and me long for deep community and deep connection and deep spirit and deep faith. All these, which are in the end manifestations of love. Lean in to those values and promises. Lean into this church, calling all people to the selfsame virtues that Paul proclaimed: freedom, joy, peace, patience, self-control, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, love. And claim your chutzpah. I mean it. Claim your chutzpah. Yes. Lean into your revelations and your lessons, all that you know. And all that you're still learning, open your heart and free its power. Free your heart's longing and power out into the world. Because you are apostles of peace and freedom. Grounded in faith, working through love in our time. And you are exactly what is needed right now. And this is our time, and we are here. Amen.